Hi, my name is Martin Purnell, and welcome to Off Grid Christianity Podcast, a weekly program for people who may or may not be going to church and those who are disillusioned with church. My guest today is a lady who, in the year 2000, launched ChristianConnection.com and is now the UK's leading Christian dating agency. She's also started a single-friendly church campaign and co-founded a charity, Transforming Faces, based in Canada. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to the Off Grid Christianity Podcast today, Jackie Elton. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us today. You've had a busy week.
So I have. Thank you, but it's nice to be here.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. Let's go for the first five questions, if that's all right, and then see where we end up after that, if that's okay. So if you're sitting comfortably, fingers on the buzzers, no conferring. If you could invite anybody from history for an evening meal, alive or dead, so that you could ask them questions, who would it be?
Well, that's probably the easiest question of them all, because last night I went to see the film The Lost King, which was a terrible film, actually, but Richard III, it has to be.
Oh, yes.
Ever since I was a teenager, I was fixated, I'm afraid, on Richard III.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, it's a bit random, but lots of people are, and it's always the mystery of what he was really like, whether he was a good guy or a bad guy, whether he killed his nephews, and whether he was really potentially one of the best kings we ever had, or whether he was a monster.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd have a lot to ask him. And the film, which I went to see with some friends who are also very interested in him, it was great fun. I mean, it was great fun going with my friends. The film itself was
meh.
Better. Yeah.
Because the thing is, I really enjoyed shortly after they found the remains of him in the car park in Leicester. Channel 4 did a 2-hour documentary on the lady that found him, you know, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. So I can't understand why they want to make a film when you've got this archetypal Channel 4 documentary. They should just reel that out again. So.
Oh, yes. I think the documentary was fantastic. But the film was made by Steve Coogan.
He was, yeah.
And it's really made from the point of view of the lady, Philippa. And it's basically a very one-sided attack by her on the authorities and Leicester University. And so what could have been a really interesting film about how it all happened and the personal dramas. I mean, there was a lot of personal drama with her and all the academics, and it could have been an amazing story, just turned into her being the poor victim of the establishment, which really wasn't fair. And there's probably going to be legal battles and all sorts of things as a result.
Because I've read that already,
And I mean, it was quite fun to watch, but really, when you're trying to, you know, what she tried to do and what many people tried to do with Richard was to show, look, he wasn't the monster that Shakespeare made him out to be.
Yeah.
And yet, by the same token, the film's all about turning certain people into monsters who probably are not monsters, but there have been some problems. There are obviously a lot of things going on there. Where there are people who won't talk to each other and blame each other for things. But, you know, it's still a great story. And one day somebody will make a better story out of it.
Maybe you and I will club together and we'll do our own version.
Yeah, I'm totally up for that.
Because what I can get over, I know we did divert ourselves here, but when you watch the documentary, it's like they turn up on a Monday morning in the car park because there was this myth that in a certain bay here where a car normally parks, there lies Richard III. And so they start digging at 9 o'clock, and like 10 minutes later, it's like,
Within 1 hour, they found him. And the great thing for me is I was a big into Richard III, but I had a cousin who lived in Market Bosworth, a very dear cousin, and she also worked as a social worker in Leicester.
Oh, wow.
She parked in that car park.
No.
Working day. And I met a guy through church years and years ago. He was quite a sort of sober Canadian guy. I really knew his flatmate, but sober, boring Canadian guy turned out to be the descendant, the one whose DNA was used. So I feel I have all these connections.
Yeah.
Very quiet. And he made the coffin because he was a woodworker, and he made the coffin for Richard III.
Wow.
So there we are.
You see, just goes to prove.
He was a descendant of Richard III's sister. So there we go.
There you go. Well, they just goes, we need to make that film.
Oh, I would love to make that film.
We'll do that.
But yeah, there's still a film to be made. Yeah. There's a story to be written.
Definitely.
But yeah. We had fun though. It was so I would love to know from, and of course the film, what I liked about the film is that there's this guy dressed up as Richard III and she is constantly asking him and he's sort of part of the story. You know, there's still this mystery of who
For those that know nothing about Richard III and for those that haven't seen the film, we won't say whether in fact he had a hump or not. We won't say that.
Complicated, but anyway,
we'll move on. Question two. Yeah. Who is your favourite biblical character or favourite biblical story or favourite parable?
Well, I went for Elijah, actually.
Okay, good one. Yeah, because...
Has anybody else ever been for Elijah?
Not yet.
So I'm the first. I don't know. I've got a friend called Elijah, actually. Elijah's becoming a really popular name. Did you know that?
No.
Elijah is emerging, surprisingly. I think it's probably more to do with Elijah Wood than Elijah, but a lot of Elijahs now. It's become a really, really popular name. And I just like just sort of this very, quite lonely, strong guy who, you know, occasionally complains a lot, but just quite brave and having to deal with, you know, a society full of problems and having to just hang in there. I love the story of him in the cave with God there. And I just, you know, whenever I'm sort of, well, we all have those problems where we feel a bit alone and a bit sort of, it's all terribly difficult. And he just feels the sense and the presence of God. And he has this conversation with God and God promises him that God is going to stand by him. And of course he does.
Yeah.
There are little stories around Elijah with the widow and yet he just takes people on and he's not prepared to compromise. And you know, he's somebody living in a very difficult time and he just sort of gets through it, makes mistakes, but he gets through it. So yes, I like Elijah.
Great answer. Thank you. Question three. This is very topical, if anyone was watching the news today. If you were Prime Minister for the day. I know. Or for the month.
How many days has she had?
That's a good question. For those listening, we're Friday, 14th of October in the year 2022. She just made a statement outside that she's going to have a new Chancellor Exchequer. If you're Prime Minister for the day and could change any law or impose a new law, what would it be?
Do you know, it's so difficult because you can't really change the world by laws. That's the great problem.
Mm.
I can't think of any law really where you just think, okay, here's a law, because it's people who change things really, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you can't, there's an expression I was once told, you can't legislate for affection. And you can't make people good by passing laws, but there's things you can do.
Yes.
I mean, obviously being somebody who's had a career with the internet, one of my sort of obsessions really is how do we clean up the internet? How do we protect people from the harm of the internet? So I know there's a lot of people trying to pass laws to stop platforms demeaning and victimizing people, driving them to the edge of their sanity, stopping Twitter bullies and pylons. I've recently been involved in some local campaigning about things and just the awfulness of what is allowed to happen online concerns me. And I can't tell you what the law would be. I mean, it's something I think about a lot, is how could you stop this? I would probably pass some law requiring a certain level of protection of the people who work on the internet, so they have proper conditions so that they are in a position to moderate what goes on. I mean, I think, and require that there is a sufficient standard and quality of moderation. Mm-hmm. You know, you have things like Facebook and Twitter where they simply don't have the quality or the amount of customer service or monitoring that they need to have, and they don't treat the people who are supposed to do the work with any protection. So, you know, we all know what the damage that does.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's so much damage going on, not just for the people who you know, are affected by, you know, what they do when they're on social media, but the people who have to work there. So when you and I don't see horrifying images, that's because somebody has had to moderate them, and what happens to people. So
no, exactly.
I don't know. I don't know how to draft it, but I do feel that, you know, I couldn't do it in a day though. I couldn't do it in a day.
Well, this is the problem, because you want to change the law, but we've also got to make a new Richard III film. You know, it's going to be difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's easier to make the Richard III film.
But more expensive, I think.
I think it's more far-reaching to sort out the internet.
Really. Yeah, it is. It is.
But it's all about the same thing, because, you know, Richard III was the victim of unregulated printing presses, you know.
Wow.
There's a connection there. There's a connection. Yeah.
As if I didn't know that, he says.
You know, we're in a, I think somebody was saying that the problems with the internet is that, I mean, and I was there obviously at the very beginning in 2000 when we launched it, and you could see all this Wild West stuff where people who didn't care about the way they behaved, I mean, a lot of, you know, other dating sites, but also social media, they could just do all sorts of crazy things. They could create fake profiles and make money and take money off them without refunding them. And it was a bit like that, presumably, with the early stage of printing presses, which was when Richard III was king. He actually encouraged printing presses.
There you go. You see.
There's a connection. There is a connection.
You see, these questions, you actually learn a lot from them. Which is good. And in fact, just a signpost for a future interview, I Wednesday night joined up with David Robertson, who runs the We Flee podcast himself. Right. and website, based in Australia now. And we talk at length about what it's like from his point of view on being trolled and getting all these emails and text. You know, from activists. It's a fascinating insight into how he deals with it.
I've learned a great deal about trolling recently, and it's, you know, it's just shocking. Shocking. And some of the people who do it are well-known people. You know, it's not just, you know, I used to think trolls were sort of sad little people in little rooms.
Living under a bridge.
Some of them are celebrities. Yeah. Some of them are executives, you know, in... Really? You know, some of them are well-paid people in good jobs, you know, who you'd never know. I mean, you'd be surprised. Some of them are, it's not just, you know, I used to think it was just sad little people who had nothing better to do. But actually, it's amazing. You know, you might meet people you think were perfectly respectable, and they're also internet trolls. And they can do it because they can get away with it.
Yes,
and there is a nasty aspect, I guess, of all sorts of people that allows them to do it. Yeah. I'm sure some of them are Christians as well. We used to be Christians, so I think we're all learning. You know, we're all going through a learning stage of just how that happens and why.
Yes, brilliant answer, thank you. Question 4: out of family events, what has been your most enjoyable day out?
Yeah, I thought about that. So I'm a bit of a tennis fan. I don't live far away from Wimbledon, and I go to Wimbledon a lot. And I always dreamed of the day when a British player would win Wimbledon. And one day, Andy Murray won Wimbledon.
I thought you were going to say 1977, Virginia Wade. You were there.
I wasn't, no. I'm on telly. No, I do remember that, though. Yeah. So I wasn't there, but Andy Murray winning, and I was there.
Oh, wow.
It was particularly I was there. I was actually there, and I wasn't Virginia Wade. I think we were all watching it on a black and white TV at school. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
I remember that. But no, I was there in the sunshine and it was so exciting. But what was also special, as you mentioned, I am the chair of a charity, Transforming Faces, with Cleft Lip and Palate. And there was a young girl there called Pinky, who'd featured in an award-winning film. And she'd been born with a cleft lip. And she she was from India, and she did the coin toss for who was going to serve first.
Yeah.
And so she was there with her surgeon, and she threw it. And there's a picture of her with Andy and Novak Djokovic. And then I met her and the surgeon afterwards at Wimbledon, and we had photographs.
So wow.
So there was that kind of connection. So it was a lot of things coming together. It was a very special day.
And were you one of the people that Andy trod on to get up to give a hug to his mum and dad?
No. He did once wave at me. I think he was practicing in one of the courts, and I waved at him and he waved back. So I was very happy about that.
Wow. You know.
I think he was just practicing somewhere, but he did actually wave at me, which was nice.
That's brilliant.
Thank you, Andy. I like, he's a bit dour, is old Andy, but he's not the most, you know, he doesn't smile very much, but, you know.
Yeah, well, he's dour, but he's got a sense of humour.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah. But I just remember that day. It was a very, very special day.
I always call him Come On Andy, because that's what you ever hear, isn't it? Yeah. It's from the mouth. Come on, Andy. I think that's his full name, actually.
No, it's actually... I think it's derived from the original Come On, Tim.
Yes.
It was adapted.
Yes, because it was originally the Henman Mound, wasn't it, I think?
It was Henman Hill.
Yeah, Henman Hill, that was
Murray, it. Murray Mound. And then sometimes, yeah.
Yes.
And sometimes you always have somebody during a Murray match used to have the poster saying, Come On, Tim. Yeah, you know, like as if he was sort of still thinking about Tim Henman. But maybe that's a little bit. I think poor old Andy is not going to do any more titles.
We'll see. Thank you. Question 5. What has been your most embarrassing moment to date, please?
Do you know, I don't get embarrassed very easily.
That's good.
My mother was always very embarrassing, so I just didn't get easily embarrassed. But I think it's just like for everybody being put into situations that you're not ready for, that you're not dressed for. I was once involved in some sort of railway company, and they were terribly unprofessional, and then you'd get sent to make a presentation at the last minute, which you just weren't prepared for, and so you'd have to stand up in a room full of people. And you didn't have any of the answers. So they'd ask you all sorts of questions about where does it go here and where does it go there? And you sort of say, I don't really know. And then I think my boss failed to show on one occasion, just missed the train. And I was standing in front of a bunch of county councillors, didn't have a script, just had to go on there. But they were very nice. They were actually very nice. you just go to an event and you're wearing all the wrong clothes because nobody told you what to wear, that kind of thing. Do you have any embarrassing moments?
Oh, loads all the time. But a bit like you, I think some of the time I just dig myself out of it, and you can get away with it and turn it around. Yeah, you know, I often think if anyone ever asked me these questions, what would I say? So I do come up with that. But yeah, I think some of the time I'm able to dig myself out of it. And actually, I learned a big thing from my son. Actually, he was only about 7 at the time, and I play a lot of golf, so I thought it was only fair that I introduced my son to play golf as well. So I took him out to this course where they had lessons for 7-year-olds. And it soon became apparent that he wasn't that good at it compared to all the other 7-year-old kids who were hitting it 2,000 yards straight down the middle. And so they were all watching my son. And he put the ball down and hit it. And it went like 5 yards to his right. Mm. And all of a sudden, a bloke from behind said, well, that wasn't very good, was it? That was rubbish.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, no, this is my son. What do I do? And he just turned around and said, yeah, it was rubbish, wasn't it? And laughed. And I thought, that's, he hasn't got any of the issues that I've got in my life, you know, or the insecurities, all the worries, all the to say that. And he laughed. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah. Well, I remember I worked for this American company and they were obsessed with golf and I couldn't play it. And they made you play at these special days. And I just made, oh, it was awful because you just had to do it. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible.
Sounds like a job for me if you have to play golf. That's.
I did try and learn golf because I really felt I must be good enough. But then I just thought, oh, what the heck?
Yeah.
I haven't played golf since. Yeah, just gave it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's taken until the past 2 years for me to win a competition. So, you know, there's always hope.
Well, you live in Northern Ireland, so presumably you take the golf very seriously then.
Well, not only that, we have the best golf courses in the world. And I know I can hear people in Scotland say, no, it's us. Nah, they are amazing.
Well, I remember because this was in America and the Americans were obsessed with their golf, but we'd acquired a Northern Irish company and all the Northern Irish guys turned up and they were really good at golf.
Yeah.
You know, they were very happy. There were no problems with them, but I was just appalling. Yeah.
Well, it helps over here that plenty of time. There must be loads of courses in central London that you can go to. He says,
"Yeah, terrible." But I'm good at mini golf.
Well, there you go then. Yeah. There you go.
I'm mini golf. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
take that.
Yeah, and not quite the same, is it? Yeah.
I don't know. It's a start. That's what we want. Let's be positive. Talking of being positive, thanks for that, by the way, Jackie. And if anybody wants to contact us about these podcasts, you're more than welcome to email us at OGC. That's OGC at accessradio.biz. Accessradio.biz. And no doubt, by the way, biz is spelled B-I-Z, as if, you know, we'd spell it any other way. He says, well, I would have, but they put it B-I-Z. But no doubt, we've already mentioned about ChristianConnection.com, and we'll come to that in a minute. But I think in light of we've been talking about cleft palates as well and some of your answers, I did mention at the start that you do a charity called Transforming Faces and it's based in Canada. Yeah. So two questions. Why is it based in Canada? And tell us more, please, on how you got involved with this fantastic charity.
Yeah. Well, I was born with a cleft lip and palate myself. So
it doesn't look like it because obviously I see you on the screen. It doesn't look like it at all.
I was amazingly lucky. My parents were, at the time I was born, it wasn't that easy to get a good job done. But my parents were very determined, very dogged, and they found somebody excellent. And so I was very fortunate. But of course, what people don't realise often about cleft lip and palate is they think, oh, maybe it's just one or two operations. But often it's several operations, lots of speech therapy, lots of different things. So I was very fortunate, but I, once you grow up, you don't really think much about it. I then saw a TV program about kids in, not just kids, but adults as well, in Sri Lanka, I think it was, where they hadn't been treated. And I realised there were large parts of the world where people don't get treated or certainly didn't get treated. So I had no idea that was a thing. So that's was what got me interested. And I have various connections with Canada, and I knew a lady who had been a missionary in India who I'd met when I was working as a volunteer in India. Oh, wow. And she'd gone back to Canada with her husband, and she was working, for church organizations in Canada. Anyway, we got together and she was she set up with we together we set up the charity in Canada because she was she was looking for something to do. So that's how we got started, and that was well over 20 years ago. So that's going very well. And the important thing is to focus not just on the operation itself, but also on all the other things that people need, because there are a lot of big charities that just do the operation, but on its own that's not enough, because you want the young people to be able to speak well, to be confident and to live normal lives. So that's what we do.
So you do an aftercare service as well, basically?
That's not really, I mean, it's everything. You know, it's like if you break your leg, you need to have physiotherapy. I mean, it's not, so there's a lot of things that need to happen for people to have normal lives. The operation It's often the start.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what we do, and we're now in lots of countries. It's a great organisation, and yeah, very very
proud. It's a great website, and to encourage those that are listening today, obviously go and have a look. But if they're thinking on a similar track, well, I'd like to sort of set up a charity. At the end of the day, you need money. So how did you go about initially trying to get people on board to say, come on, give me some money so we can set this going?
Well, I think I was kind of fortunate because I had access to money to start it up. But really, I think with something like Cleft Lip and Palate, it's actually not that hard to raise money. It certainly wasn't then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of thing where, it's a funny thing. I think people were really quite interested and supportive from the start. I don't know why, but it sometimes you do things and nothing seems to work. You know, you try and you think, why isn't this working? Why isn't this happening? I think with Transforming Faces, it took off from the word go. And people got involved and people were helpful. And obviously it's a very visual thing, a cleft lip and palate. So people, they can sort of see themselves in that situation. So they think, well, what would it be if it was me? So it's one of those things it's not that hard to, I'm not saying it's easy, but it is easier probably to raise money for something like that than it would be, let's say, I don't know, things like problems on the internet.
Yes.
There are some things that are much harder to raise money for.
Yeah.
It's always easier to raise money for things related to children than difficult teenagers or elderly people.
Hmm.
I mean, there's things that are just easier than others to raise money for.
So just give us one example then of how you went round to get some money to start it all off, please.
We a friend of mine went around making videos. So, you know, came on the trip and made videos. So we got the videos going. We set up events in Canada. People came to the events. I think it's a gradual thing. You know, you just get friends involved. It's called friend raising over there. It's not, I think, you know, you just have to show people that what you do works. And I mean, the other rather strange thing about what we do is there's some very, very big charities in that space who do sort of enormous amounts of fundraising, and people get a bit confused between them and us. So they think they've heard of us.
Yes.
So they kind of know what it's all about, or they think they do. And so that kind of helps as well, because people have become much more aware of the issues of cleft lip and palate, and I think people were just, you know, understanding that this was an important issue. So yes, people have always been supportive, and I think it's just about getting really good people in the organisation, people who really care and believe in it. And yeah, I can't really say more than
No, it's fantastic. No, you've given us an overview, which is brilliant.
I never ran the organisation on a day to day basis, so there was always a team of people who just got started and got going and had a lot of passion. I think it's about believing in what you do.
Yeah.
But also being sensible, you know, not just belief on its own isn't enough. You have to show people that it works.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's called Transforming Faces, isn't it? And if people want to look at it in more detail, what's the website address, please?
Transformingfaces.org.
Transformingfaces.org. Well worth having a look. Which then leads back onto obviously another a website, but I'm going to be a bit of a tease here because I want to leave that to the last. So we'll talk about christianconnection.com if that's okay.
Sure.
But I want to talk about Single Friendly Church campaign, if that's okay. That could mean a variety of things. So tell us more what your campaign is all about, please, Jackie.
Well, obviously you're leaving christianconnection.com to the last, but it kind of came out of that because, you know, having run a dating site for many years, we sort of began to realize, well, quite soon realized that single people in church, who were many of our customers on the dating site, could be quite difficult as customers. And that wasn't because, you know, that was because often they were having a difficult time in church. They felt let down, and they'd often been made lots of promises about the abundant life they were going to have in the church. They were also being told, don't marry this person, don't marry that person, do as we tell you. And they felt themselves to be sort of on their own. And
yes.
The church says, you know, you've got to marry another Christian person, you've got to be like this. But then when you don't find the perfect Christian partner, the church treats you often as sort of a failure or somebody who's maybe a bit strange or isn't, you know, is not leading the full Christian life as they should be. And so somehow single people feel the church is not for them.
Mm.
So many churches, quite wrongly in my view, describe themselves as family friendly. There's sort of happy pictures of the vicar or minister and their wife and, you know, their children. And so
perfect white teeth when smiling.
Perfect white teeth. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but there's so much of that. And then you go to a church and there's mothers and toddlers groups and, you know, family this and family that. So everything about church can make a single person or a divorced, and it's, you know, it's not just single people in their 20s, but single people at all stages of life, for all kinds of reasons, feel, well, church isn't for me at all. And the thing is that at the last count, 40% of adults are single. That's a huge number. It's a massive number. And that's probably going up. That's based on the census of 2011. So 2021, which is when we had the last census, it's probably going to be even higher.
Yeah.
And yet, if you went to church, most churches, you'd just assume that everybody was in a family. And that if you weren't, you were some sort of strange, you know, strange outcast. So if churches don't orient themselves and don't think about what it feels like to be a single person and don't have a real welcome for single people, they are simply cutting off, you know, nearly half the population.
Yes.
And yet it takes a lot for churches to really think that through and change what they're all about. So that's what we're trying to do, is to say, this is how you become a single-friendly church. And it's not that hard. It just requires a sort of thinking it through, thinking what it means to be single-friendly. It's about the language you use, you know, the signs on the front of the church, the signs on the website, the pictures you have, how people have been welcomed. And a lot of people in churches just haven't thought about it. And so it's becoming a process, but it's quite a lot of work.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, if you and I teamed up together, not only have you got to look out for the internet as Prime Minister, but we've got to make a film as well, but also going to have to find time to promote the single-friendly church campaign.
Yeah.
So how are you going to go into how, if I was like a church pastor or something like that, what is the single biggest thing you'd say to me?
Well, we've created something called the five steps. So I would say, first of all, you need to think about, so we give, we'll give you a little flyer. And the first thing would be, who is single? You know, who is single in society? Who's single in your church? Do you even know who's single in your church? And, you know, at every stage, from sort of, you know, young, single, never been married, to single parent, widow, divorce. So really understanding who in the church is single, and also who in your patch, in your surrounding area is single. How many is it? Is it 30%? Is it 40%? Is it 50%? Really understanding, sort of getting a real picture of who is single. And how and why and what are they thinking? And then you think about, well, how are we welcoming them? You know, what are we saying all over our church websites and welcoming? And are we talking about our family service, or are we talking about a worship together service, or what services do the single people tend to gravitate towards and why are they not coming? And then you talk about language and preaching. So standing up saying, well, I was with my wife and the kids and we were in the car and we were talking about this. And then you think, well, if a single person is listening to that, they're immediately feeling alienated. Because this is not about them. You don't need to talk about this. There's lots of things you can talk about in life which don't involve, you know, the wife and the kids and the, you know. So it's just making sure that things you talk about. And then the celebrations and the events that people have, you know, people celebrate christenings and mothers and, Christmas, Mother's Day, all those kind of things. A lot of them are around family. And so what about people's work events and promotions and birthdays? So celebrating things that single about around that could be about anybody. And having social events that maybe inviting people, you know, people going off to the pub after the service, so that, you know, often single people are on their own after the service. So just making sure that there's somewhere for them to go. Those are the sort of things that really matter to people. And then making sure, very important, that single people are seen to be in leadership and they're preaching and they're doing all those things. So they're seen to be important, cool people who are in the leadership of the church and they're informing the decision making of the church. There, I think I've probably covered most of it.
Well, you have, but I tell you what's brilliant is because when I first read up that you did this single friendly church campaign, in my naivety, I immediately thought of, single, well, I didn't get married to XX years, so it's for that. And of course, it's not. You just hit me for six by saying that, you know, over 40% of people who go to church, you know, are single. You know, that is a phenomenal statement. So,
well, no, that's not the people who go to church. That's in society.
Sorry, yes.
In church, it's a lot fewer. And so often people in church aren't seeing that. So they're seeing families when they go to church. So they're not even aware. And that's the problem because so many single people are put off church and they don't see it. So we're not seeing what's in society.
Yeah. So when you came up with this fantastic idea and you wanted to promote it, I take it you went to your church. What did they think when you said you were doing this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think the hardest place to go is your own church.
Yeah.
And in fact, I don't think my church is at all single friendly. I think it's much easier to go to other people's churches. I think you have to start with the churches that are most likely to be positive towards it. So you start with, the people who are most responsive. I mean, what we've been actually quite blessed, it seems odd to say. We started off by producing a survey, just really, talking about what people thought about their church. We published the information and put it on the website and put out press releases. And of course, people were quite interested, but then that was that.
Yeah.
People move on. So then we thought, well, how are we going to spread the word? Because obviously, if you tell single people, they kind of already know. So that's not going to get you very far. So we've tried to have, we started off with seminars and, you know, inviting people from different dioceses to come along. Of course, with COVID, we actually were quite fortunate in a way because it's a lot easier to invite church leaders from their living rooms,
yes,
you know, at midday to come and join you on Zoom or Google Meet or whatever and have a chat about it and train them in it than it is to try and get them to come up for a conference or something. So then what we're doing is asking them to complete audits and to think about their own churches and take it from there. So it's quite a slog, actually. It really is. I mean, you know, the last 3 days we've been at the Christian Resource Centre, with a stand and engaging people in conversation. And, you know, sometimes you just get people whizzing past you and they don't want to know. Or they think, oh, I've been married for 40 years. You know, yeah, but it's still important for you.
Yeah.
And then other people, you know, we had this lovely couple from the Methodist Church. Yeah, we've been single for a long time. We're so wanting to promote what you do. We think it's so important. We want to promote it right across the Methodist Church. So you get every end of it. So you get people who really, really passionate about it.
Yes.
And then you go, yes. And other times where you think, why are we bothering? Nobody wants to know. But I think, you know, we had a... Yesterday was a good day. I think we reached a lot of people. So I think you have to find kind of people to start with who are keen, and then we're signing people up to commit to being single friendly churches. And then yeah. I think you go for the people who are keen to start with, yeah. and then gradually you build up from there.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, you mentioned Christian Resource Exhibition, which is at Sandown Racecourse,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever told you the story when you phoned up, so we can liaise about this podcast. But I went there in 1993, so people can work out how old I am. And the sole intention was, at the time I was still single, I was at crossroads in my life, I was obeying God, I knew how to apply for redundancy, I applied for redundancy, and I wanted to see where I was going to go. And I had this brilliant idea that with the money from redundancy, I was going to learn how to fly a plane. And I knew that MAF would be there.
They were there as you came in. The first thing you see is MAF with their
mission. Brilliant. Yeah. Mission Aviation yeah. Fellowship. So I go with a good friend of mine. We go out there together. And as you say, walk in the door, there is MAF. So I make a beeline and say, this is who I am, blah, blah, blah. Been a Christian for X number of years, blah, blah, blah. Just been made redundant. I'm pushing a door here. That's what I said. I'm pushing a door here to see whether I should be coming to join you as a... Have you got a pilot's license? No, I've got the money. I'm prepared to learn how to fly a plane. Not a problem. He said, well, that's fine. He says, it'll be about £6,000 to get your pilot's license. I was going, okay, if that's what God wants me to do, I will do it. And I said, is that it? And he said, no. He said, because we'll be flying, you know, you'll be flying in Africa or wherever, you need a commercial pilot's license because that's how it operates. You know, it might only be flying one person, but you need to have a commercial pilot's license. I thought, yeah, that's no problem at all. How much is that? He said, well, if you do it over here, it's about £70,000. But if you do it in Canada, let's say, where you can get it cheaper, it's about £40,000. And it was like, bye. And that was my...
That was into that.
Yeah, the quickest interview I've ever had with Mission Aviation Fellowship.
But that was not very encouraging of them, was it?
Well, I don't know. I think it was because he'd been honest. It was me saying bye, not him. I was like...
So how do you recruit people for...
I think, well, you then explained that I think a lot of the pilots are people that have come into retirement and they're maybe ex-RAF or... You know, airline pilots and things like that, and so they feel called to it like that way. But in my case, no, it wasn't.
No, they still bring the plane in, and it's still the first thing you see when you come in. Yeah.
Well, they never had a plane when I was there.
Oh no, they got a plane. I mean, there's no free trips. I mean, that would be
beautiful. Yeah. No, there was just a stand in my day.
Center, but yeah, no, we were very. There were times where we thought, oh, we're wasting our time here. But actually, yesterday was a very good day. We had, on the day before yesterday, almost nobody signed up. It was just like, why are we even here? And then yesterday was miraculous. We had a huge response.
That's fantastic.
That was good. Yeah, so...
Good.
There are times where you feel incredibly unencouraged. And then the next day was like a different world. It was just lovely.
Well, it's like, but that is a lot, isn't it? I mean, to be encouraged on your final day, Christian Resource Exhibition, brilliant.
I'm almost thinking, why would we even bother to come for the last day? Except you have to, you know, because you sign up to do it, and then it was just a different story. Yeah,
fantastic. Maybe I'll come over next year. There you go.
Well, they're very upset because they're supposed to be in Liverpool in May, mm-hmm. but it's been cancelled because of the Eurovision Song Contest. Who knew? Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think they're having it at Sandown next year, but there we are. So the Eurovision Song Contest has knocked them for six, so that's very shame.
Or boom, banger, bang, as we could say.
Yes, boom, banger, bang. That takes us back, doesn't it?
1969 Lulu.
Yeah, she was on a programme the other day. She was in some sort of show.
Well, yeah, she's aged. She's done very well.
She looks amazing.
Yeah, she's done very well indeed on that. Yeah. Right, well, the time has come now. Thank you for sharing that. We must look at the Christian dating agency that you
must
started.
Call it an agency. I have to stop you here. We're a dating website and an app.
Okay. Thank you. Stop me away.
An agency, all right? Okay.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, I'm taking my hand out now. Look, please, I'm admonishing myself.
Okay.
Well, I tell you why then.
There's a difference. There is a difference.
I was just going to say, why? What's the difference?
Well, agencies were a sort of old style thing where there'd be a sort of lady or a gentleman who would say, well, Martin, you know, so you want to find somebody, so tell us all about you. And then they'd be a personal service. And
I want to join MAF.
And, you know, and then you'd be, there'd be a few people, you know, and you'd be introduced. So it'd be a personal service. It was the old style.
Yes.
Dating website is where you go online. You don't talk to us at all. You put your details up. You describe who you're looking for. And then the magic of you know, the technology matches you up with lots of different people according to what your preferences are, you know, who you're looking for, where you live, your age, your type of Christian thing, what your type of beliefs, and you find people online and you're offered matches. So it's a completely different world. You know, there'll be thousands of people on there and the system will help you to identify the different people. So it's a world away from the nice old-fashioned dating agency. And then there's the app, which is usually, of course, nowadays people do it through their mobile phones, smartphones, and they're doing it on the move. And people call them dating apps, and they scroll through. So we're sort of, we started off as a dating website, but we also provide an app as well. So people can, you know, they can literally be just wherever they are looking for that special person, and then to communicate with them online or mobilely and that sort of thing. So it's really moved on from we came in 2000 as a dating website. So we've never really been an agency, which is where you've effectively got an agent helping you.
Yes.
And that's the difference.
Thank you. Well, here's the thing then. Let's just say that what I was going to ask was that if you look at my wife and look at me, we are completely different, all right? She can't stand football. Now, she might like some of the rock bands that I like, but, you know, the things that I hold dear are not quite to her taste. And yet we work, because, you know, they often say opposites attract. So I don't know how your algorithms work or how it's done, but how does that play in your app?
Well, I mean, I think the football thing is pretty universal, isn't it? I mean, how many women really love football?
Yeah. Well, there's a few that love Bristol City, which is my team, just saying.
There's a few.
Not many.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would advise you, if not you, but I would advise a bloke going online, if you say, I just love football and I only want to meet a woman who likes football as much as me, I'd say, dream on. You know, it's not going to be. Likewise, you know, if you're a woman and you said, look, I love to read Jane Austen and I want somebody who's really into, say, novels.
Yeah.
And I want to meet a guy who loves novels like I do, then, you know, that's just not going to work, is it? I mean, of course, there are some men who love novels, but it's just not. Men and women are a little bit different. So I think people just have to learn how to express themselves and reach out to each other. And obviously, hopefully, they're going to find interests. Well, I mean, I'm sure you do have some interests in common with your wife. I hope you do anyway. But one of them obviously would be Christianity.
Yes.
So that's obviously a strong thing.
Yes.
And then so I think people do gravitate to people who share something. So I think it's about throwing out the things that you care about, but try and make sure they're not all sort of the obvious things that, you know, men and women are different in many ways.
Yeah. Clearly. I was just thinking of that pregnant pause I gave there when you said, I'm sure you got lots of interest together. And there's stunned silence from me.
Sorry. I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
But yeah, we do.
I mean, I can't pretend that obviously the way people interact, why certain people find each other special is a bit of a mystery.
Yeah.
No dating app or website is ever going to fully capture that. So it is about, I think the simple answer is you just got to get talking to people.
Yes.
It's got to communicate. You know, I think we used to get people to fill out these incredibly long profiles with every bit of interest, exactly what music they liked, exactly like going for country walks and politics and all that. But I think a lot of the time it's just about, you know, more and more just getting to talk to people. Now we've got Zoom and things like that. People can talk to each other more easily, and it's about getting out there. And so really what we're offering is a bridge into actually just reaching out to as many people as you can.
Yes.
you know, but in a safe safe way.
Yeah.
But I mean, you get a little bit from a profile. You know, you'll get a sense of whether you find the person interesting or attractive, or there's something in common. But as long as people aren't too fussy, if they say, well, if they don't like the same books as me, and they don't live in exactly the same part of the country as me, and people need to learn that actually it's not as simple, that, you know, you have to be quite open as to whom you might meet.
Would it be right of me for saying that certainly in my, not so much teenagers, but in my 20s and 30s growing up, which is unfortunately the other side of the start of the century, there was a bit of a stigma attached if you actually mentioned you were going to go on to, even though we didn't have websites in those days.
We didn't have them, so
no. But there's Christian dating agents, that A word, the Christian dating agency. Have you found that there's still a stigma attached maybe to when you started up doing your website?
Certainly when we started up, definitely. And people were told, you mustn't go on a dating agent. You know, you mustn't do it. People were being told, you know, they would ask the vicar or the vicar's wife and be told, no, you shouldn't do that. And I remember getting quite cross, actually. And so people wouldn't say. I mean, I remember going to weddings of friends and they didn't tell people how they met.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be embarrassed. I think it's changed so much now. I think it's changed so much. And people are, I meet friends, they tell me their kids met on apps and websites, and they're perfectly open about it. They're fine. It's just, it is now more normal than not, I would say. I mean, it's certainly one of the most common ways in which people meet, because we know, where are they going to meet?
Well, exactly. I mean, a really good friend of mine.
They don't meet in church anymore. I mean, they've got graphs about how people meet, and it's very rare for people to meet. You know, what are the alternatives? You know, meet through friends, meet through bars, meet on aeroplanes, meet on holiday.
Yeah.
But increase so. I mean, it's now gone from, oh, that's a really weird thing to do, to it's totally normal. It's almost boring.
Well, so, there's your cat there. A really good friend of mine, when I said that you were coming on, you know, he said, well, actually, when you think about your podcast you're doing, Off-Grid Christianity, and people who might not be going to church anymore, how are they going to be able to find a partner if they can't go to church? And I think, thank you. Exactly. So,
well, yeah. You know, there are a lot of Christians who are, especially men, I mean, probably both, but, you know, who are still identify as Christians but rarely go to church. And they're certainly not going to go to the same church. I mean, the point is, you know, how are you going to meet the person? I think for Christians it's really important, because how are you going to meet the perfectly nice person who goes to the church, you know, 2 miles away? Because we all, you know, if we do go to church, and increasingly people may, you know, receive their spiritual inspiration in other ways, they're not necessarily going to meet in the service. They might be going to a different service. And men are less likely to actually show up at a service than women. So you know, meeting through a site or an app is one way that they can meet. Of course, the awful thing used to be, if you did meet somebody in church and you did start dating, and then what happened? Everybody in the church was checking them out, and how's it going on? And then what happened if the relationship came to an end? And then somebody would actually have to quit the church.
Yeah,
so the beauty of meeting somebody, you know, and, oh, they dumped so-and-so, and, oh, weren't they terrible, and they shouldn't have done that. And so, you know, you were expected to behave by these incredibly Christian standards within a church relationship, which was incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
In the normal way, trying to meet different people.
I think your cat wants to listen. I think your cat wants to join dating agency.
She likes website. To be part of things. She does like to be part of things. I mean, that was the awful thing about meeting in church, is that then somebody would have to leave the church because it would be painful to then see them.
I was going to say, tell me about it. I'm talking about a friend of mine, obviously. Moving on.
Friend of yours, yes.
Bringing it all back.
No, but it would be awful, and you know, to have to. So much easier to have your pick of people, you know, outside the church.
Yeah.
So you it wasn't sort of tied into your spiritual, you know, where you went to church. But yes, I mean, Christian Connection was something that really took off from the word go. It was amazing how people responded to it.
Which is fantastic. Well, we're going to have to draw it to close because it's got one more question. But in summarising, ChristianConnection.com.
Yes, .com. Yeah.
Thank you. I remember.
We are, by the way, not just in the UK. We are in Australia as well and America and other places too. Yeah.
How many, because do you remember back in the 80s we used to watch Blind Date with Cilla? Our Cilla.
I never really did.
Didn't you? I think they had about 5 or 6 success stories, and she'd always go on about, I have to buy a new hat, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
so how many hats have you been invited to all the weddings would you be having in your hat collection by now?
It's really sad. I mean, it's been 22 years. I've hardly been to any weddings.
Really?
Because I don't know them. I mean, very early on, one of my best friends, I'd say we're not an agency. It was a very early days, and he wanted to go on the site, and I helped him because we had so few people on the site at the time. And I helped him, and I picked out 2 nice women for him, and he married one of them. I went to that wedding.
Good. Well, have you been invited to every single wedding as a result of ChristianConnection.com?
Yeah.
How many hats would you have?
Oh, I don't know, but I'd have several thousand. But you know what? I don't like hats. I don't really like them. I like my hair. I've got good hair. I think.
Yeah.
So I wear my hair. Fully.
Yeah.
I'd have hundreds of thousands of hats. You see, it's a different scale.
Yes.
We're far, far more successful than Cilla ever was. You know what? I think I remember going to somebody's wedding. He was actually the guy who helped us set up Australian Christian Connection, but then he came over to the UK. And because his marriage broke up, sadly, and he came to the UK and he met somebody in England and he got married in England and then they went back to Australia. And I went to that wedding. Right. And the trouble was, I mean, I actually did know the guy, but everybody was sort of wondering who the hell I was. You know, I was there and it's like, who are you? What is your connection to this wedding? And it is kind of a difficult thing to explain.
Had you been Cilla, they would all have known why you were there, of course, but that's TV.
Yes. I doubt that Cilla would have been invited to many of those weddings.
Yeah.
But, it is a little bit awkward. And I remember with my first friend's wedding, you know, the friend that I knew, I don't think he'd even told most of his family how he'd met his wife.
Yes, because of the stigma.
I blurted it out at some point. I hadn't realised that it was a secret. So
Wow. Well, listen, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you and listening to you. More importantly, Jackie, thank you for sharing what you shared regarding Single Friendly Church campaign. If people actually want to get involved in this or know more, how can they do it, please?
Well, it's very easy. You just go to the Single Friendly Church website and I think there's an invitation to sign up and then you can get newsletters. And obviously, if your church is interested, we ask churches to do a very simple audit and then they can become single friendly churches and they can be on the map. And so then people know that they're a single friendly church. So,
brilliant.
Pardon?
Say again.
It's on the website, hopefully.
Thank you. And the website for Transforming Faces?
That's transformingfaces.org. Yeah.
Thank you. And of course, last but not least, not that I've mentioned it before, but should you be single of whatever age, I take it, there's no...
Yes. Well, no, sorry, that's not true. You can't be under 18. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have rules. Yeah.
Good.
Strict rules.
Yeah.
But any adult.
Any adult. Yeah, thank you. So if you're an adult...
Provided you're available, of course. we have to hedge it in here.
Yeah, I can just admit, yes.
To encourage people who are otherwise committed. Yes,
well worded.
So
apart from those caveats, it's ChristianConnection.com.
Yes.
Great. Jackie, thank you for joining us today. It remains me for me to say, please, that if you want to know any more and you want to contact us, then obviously use our own website, which is ogc@accessradio.biz. That's ogc@accessradio.biz, biz is spelled B-I-Z. This has been a BCSC production. Jackie, in the remaining 2 minutes, please tell me who your Christian hero is. And I always put a little exclamation to this, that hopefully you've chosen someone that's dead so that we can't then in years to come say, oh yeah, look what happened to that person, and not in the Bible. So who is your Christian hero, please?
Well, I struggled with this. I don't really believe in Christian heroes, so I'm afraid I went very boringly for Thomas Cranmer.
Well, no one's ever chosen Thomas Cranmer yet, so...
Sorry about that.
No, that's very, no, that's very good. Tell us more, please.
I thought about Wilberforce, but then he was very anti-Catholic, so I'm sure people have chosen Wilberforce.
Not yet, nope.
Oh, well...
No, William Wilberforce, in years gone by, when I was on the radio, yes, but no... So tell us more about Thomas Cranmer, please.
But he was just a very gentle, serious bloke who never really wanted to be Archbishop of Canterbury at all. And he was just around at a most horrendous time, you know, people getting their heads chopped off and burned at the stake and all sorts of things. And Henry VIII was probably one of the most unpleasant kings ever, you know, difficult. And he somehow had to make sense of all this. And he was obviously a Protestant, and he put together the prayer book. And he just got on with the business of trying to remake the church in a way that, you know, people would have a meaningful Christian life in a time when it was a battlefield. And I think he managed to retain his humility, his Christian faith. But he wasn't terribly heroic. And then, unfortunately, when things went the wrong way and Mary came to the throne, he was threatened with being burned. And so he recanted everything and said, oh, I was wrong. But then he turned around, and so he was burned at the stake, but he recanted his recantation and was a martyr. So he stood up for what he believed was right. But he was a very gentle, decent sort of guy. Yeah. Wow. Who still, his work is still with us every day, really, in a lot of what he produced. And he worked together with other people. So he wasn't this sort of very heroic type of person. But I think his work endured. And he didn't make big stands about things, but he was serious.
Yes.
So who's your Christian hero? Well, you've got lots of them. It's difficult, isn't it?
George Müller.
George Müller.
Müller, M-U-L-L-E-R. German in the 1850s, came over to London, went down to Totnes because he had tuberculosis, and on the way back stopped in Bristol, and he just noticed the destitution there of kids. And throughout his life, he decided to do something about it, and got enough, like £1.5 million in those days, set up 5 big orphanages, and absolutely amazing guy. And
yes, a lot of people like Dr. Bernardo are quite amazing. Yes. Absolutely yes. Amazing. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is another one.
I was just going to say Dietrich Bonhoeffer, yeah, as well.
Love him too, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's been chosen many times, has he?
Not recently, no. Not recently. Really? Yeah, yeah.
Still current recent heroes.
Yeah, there's very few. Very few. It's interesting. I think it's good that we can actually look back in the past and remember. So
who are the current favorite? Who are people mentioning nowadays?
Everyone's been totally different. Everybody. I haven't had a duplicate yet.
You haven't had a duplicate?
No.
Okay.
So I'm really.
No, I mean, I think it's those sort of patient people who are just working away at trying to build the foundations of. Yes. Of people being able to have Christian lives, rather than the person going out on a limb and, you know, doing something terribly heroic.
But, well, you did ask me earlier on, and we'll close with this because it will tie up very nicely about ChristianConnection.com and Single Friendly Church Campaign. I'll be honest with you, I now have one of my most embarrassing moments that has just come to the forefront.
Oh, right, yes.
I split up with my Christian girlfriend, and it was like, ugh. And then I moved to go and join the Christian radio station. And I was then going out with somebody else. And one Saturday afternoon, whilst fixing her car, she brought me out a cup of tea or something like that. And I turned around and said, thank you very much. And I called her by my ex-girlfriend's name, not her name.
Oh, that is embarrassing.
Yes. Oh, it gets better. It gets better.
Like the Ross and Rachel moment, isn't it?
What, in Friends?
Yeah.
Oh, it's worse. So we then she then storms off, quite rightly into a kitchen, so I then have to follow suit. And obviously, I have to do serious amounts of digging myself out of the hole, which I did. Really pleased about that. So I then go back to fix her radio in the car. She comes out, and I did the exact same thing again. I called her.
And what happened to the relationship?
It lasted a few more months after that.
All right, but she's not your wife.
No, but twice in the space of 5 minutes.
I was trying to tell you something, you know.
Yeah. So there you go. That's an embarrassing moment, which ties in very nicely to ChrisConnection.com. If you ever join that, please make sure you don't call the person you're seeing by an ex's name.
I think it can blur a bit sometimes, you know, because people, one of the big problems with dating is it gives people choice. And sometimes people need to learn how to handle choice. We always say we are not relationship counsellors. You know, we provide what I think is a wonderful, a wonderful site, a wonderful app, but we are not there to sort of hold their hand and tell, you know, be relationship counsellors, because that is, I think, beyond what we do. There are perhaps other people who can do that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Jackie, it's been an absolute delight talking to you and listening to you today. Thank you so much for joining us today on Off Grid Christianity. Thank you so much.
Thank you.